very important two-segment conversation here because Danny's been gone for a long, long time, like over 2 weeks.
Two weeks.
He grew his hair out. Mm-hmm.
As much as it can grow in 2 weeks.
It's incredible. But he
spent a lot of time taking my wiener into the pool like George. Did a lot of that.
So you traveled.
Some.
RV?
No. He didn't end up not trying to pull that off.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's, you know what? As opposed to me trying to set up something I am flying blind into, let me turn it over to Danny himself. Danny!
So I had 2 weeks off. First week was the company mandated furlough that we're all, you know, susceptible to and have had to follow through on. Week two was an actual week of vacation because we got to burn these things at some point because they don't carry over. And I chose to do it after the furlough so I could have a nice, 16 days off?
Yeah.
When you count the 3 weekends, which is a pretty nice
little
chunk.
That's a long time.
Yeah, the first week was spent kind of hanging out around town and swimming a bunch and doing work in the yard and whatnot. But the second week, decided to do some stuff. And it ended up on a little trip to Oklahoma, to Lawton, Oklahoma. That's where it all kind of culminated. So I'll give you guys a little bit of background. Corby, you know most of my family history, and I've told some stories on the air about how I was brought up. And it's, you know, I think it's fairly interesting. Some people might find it interesting, but I was adopted. I was given up for adoption and in Boston, Massachusetts, where I was born, and ended up the first 10 months of my life living with foster parents with three different foster homes until I was finally adopted when I was almost a year old in Providence, Rhode Island. And I was adopted to an older couple, a man and a woman who were married. The woman was unable to have children anymore because she was already in her 40s. The man was probably late 30s, I believe, at the time. And he was in the Navy. So we traveled a ton. Lived in a base in Providence. We lived in a base on a base in Mountain View, California, in Memphis, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Texas. I probably went to about 9 different elementary schools before we settled in Knox City, Texas.
Wow.
When I started the 5th grade year there.
Brutal.
Yeah. And the reason we ended up locating to Knox City was because this couple that adopted me decided to get a divorce. And we moved there because my adopted mother, who passed away 2 years ago, her parents lived in that city. That's where they chose to live and had lived most of their 25, 30 years in that small town. My grandfather was a farmer. They retired, and that's where they ended up settling. They had all their, you know, most of their kids were in the Knox County, Abilene, Wichita Falls area. So that kind of central West Texas area was where both my mother and father that adopted me kind of grew up, and their family was strewn about all of those parts known, I guess, as the Rolling Plains. So my parents ended up getting divorced, and this is weird for me to talk about. I mean, it's easier for me to talk about to close friends.
You were how old?
I was about 10. I was starting 5th grade. The summer of 4th grade is when they split up and we located to be close to my mother's folks. It's difficult it's a little more difficult for me to talk about on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this stuff, there's a lot of lies, a lot of betrayal that went on in regards to me continuing any type of relationship with the man who adopted me with this woman. So they split up, and he had his reasons, which I came to find out much later in life, very valid ones to end their marriage. And throughout my young adult life, and even into my 20s and 30s, I had the belief that he was a bad guy.
That he left y'all.
That he left, and if there was any child support ever paid, it had to be at the threat of him being put in jail by my mother. My mother went to great lengths to poison the well on my attitudes towards my dad.
That's pretty common, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's the sides taken. Now, to this extreme, probably not, but I think that you're playing in divorce situations outside of probably a very small number. They're playing one another.
I bet you tons of dads lose the PR battle badly when there's a divorce and they don't have custody.
Mom gets the kids.
Right? Yeah.
Mom always gets the kids. Yeah.
Correct. Now, my mom was a very complex, I would say difficult woman. She was not an easy woman to grow up with in a house with just her and a little sister. I have a younger sister who they adopted in Memphis, Tennessee in 1973. So she's about 5.5 years my junior. So we weren't particularly close, mainly because of the age gap.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the time we settled in Knox City, I'm in middle school and high school, and she's the little kid that I'm just too cool to hang out with. It was just kind of too much of a difference in age, unlike your sister, which you guys are 1.5, 2 years
yeah,
apart.
Yeah, we're 2 years.
So you guys were probably pretty close growing up for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt kind of like isolated in that home. My mother, prior to marrying my dad, she had gone through a lot of marriages, and she had had a natural child with one of her early relationships, who is my half brother, but not really by any type of blood, because I'm adopted. I'm not from that bloodline. And he had already moved out. He was gone from the home. He's much older than me. And I didn't, you know, I had a relationship with him, but it was visiting, you know, maybe once every year, holidays here and there, but not super close until much later. So one weekend when I was in the eighth grade, so basically my dad, he kind of gave up. He kept running into a brick wall and trying to have a relationship with the kids. And he just decided, you know what, this is more trouble than it's worth.
Where was he living when he left?
He was kind of all over. He was in West Texas, in the Midland area, in the Lubbock area, in a town called Shallow Water, I believe. Yeah, Shallow Water, a suburb of Lubbock.
And were you wanting to have, like, were you saying, man, I want to hang out with this guy more or whatever?
I did. But the thing was, is the stories that were told to me about him left a very negative impact on my image of who he was.
Mm-hmm.
But they were, as I come to find out later in life, they were by and large,
they were not the truth,
fabrications. So one, I hadn't seen the man in 3 years. So when I'm about 13, I guess is when you're eighth grade, 12, 13. I had an opportunity to go stay a weekend with him, with his new wife that he had remarried after he left my mother. And I went up there and stayed for several days, and I thought we had a really great time. We played. He's a lifelong musician, a wonderful guitar player. We jammed together like basically every day. Went to a couple of shows that he was playing in with some friends. Like they called them jamborees,
mm-hmm.
That people could come here and drink beer and whatnot and hang out. Went and attended one of those, but he worked during the day, so I was left alone a couple of days in the house by myself. But I just watched TV.
Yeah.
Well, when it came time to drop me off, I, you know, go back to my house, and my mother told me about a week later that she got a call from my father and said that while I was there, I had gone through their stuff and stolen from them, and I was no longer welcome back.
Jeez.
Which was a lie made up by his wife at the time. Now, there was a power struggle between his wife and my mother, and I kind of fell in the middle of that. So there was a lot. She wanted to poison my dad on me.
Right.
Because
dang,
there was that power struggle between the two. And my mom wanted to poison me on my father. So it was just this huge twist of untruths, false narratives, and
a little
just
kid
out
is
and out
caught
lies.
In the middle.
Yeah. Now, my sister was kind of exempt from this because she didn't really know him up to the point when he left. She was very, very young.
Yeah.
So she didn't really know him that well, didn't have much of a relationship. But I grew up with this man for the first 10 years of my life, and
yeah,
I had really fond memories of him. Now, later on in life, my mother would tell me stories about, well, you know, your father used to beat you. And I don't remember those things, but in my mind as a little kid, I created these memories that just weren't true.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, it was really tough. She was a difficult, difficult woman. So fast forward to 2018, and you guys remember it was about this time that year that I was going through a really difficult back surgery. Now, granted, up to that point, I had tried to reach out to my dad, and we'd had a few email connections in my early 20s. I wanted him to let him know that he had a grandson, because in 92, Josh was born, and I wanted him to be aware of what was going on, that he had a grandson out there. So we talked a little bit back then and just kind of lost connection. And then, for whatever reason, and I don't know what it was, 2 years ago, it was my mother, his ex-wife, was very ill. She was nearing the end of her life. I was very in a very bad place in recovery from that surgery, because I was in an immense amount of pain prior and through the early stages of my recovery. And I don't know why, but I called his brother. I found his brother and got my dad's number and reached out to him and called him.
Wow.
And we talked on the phone probably two or three times.
Did you call him Dad when you called him, or did you call him Phil? Dad, this is Danny.
No, I just called him Dad. Okay. Yeah, hey, Dad, it's Danny. And go ahead.
How'd you know his brother?
I grew up, it was my uncle. My uncle, Gary.
Okay, was he still around?
Yeah.
Oh,
he
was
around at the time. He's since passed since in the last couple of years. But his brother, Gary, gave me his number and said, yeah, he'd probably like to hear from you. So we reconnected a couple of years ago on the phone. But that was a difficult year for me. I'd gone through a tough breakup with someone, and I was recovering from this surgery, and my mom died in early July of 2018. Evelyn did. And I had a lot of really mixed emotions about her, because her true colors were really shown as maybe even more of a difficult woman than the one that I grew up with. And I became really resentful and angry with her, to the point that I just didn't even want to go visit her in the nursing home. I just kind of abstained. It took all of the energy that I had to go visit this woman, because during that time, all of the things that I had believed were being revealed to me through family members that were complete utter BS.
Yeah.
Dang.
So I had a lot of resentment towards her, and I also was starting to kind of come around on the idea that, hey, maybe my pop's not that bad of a dude. Well, for whatever reason, we lost contact again, and I will take ownership of this. I wasn't in the right head and heart space to deal with a reconnection at that time. So fast forward again, 2 years later. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, but it was July 9th, 10 o'clock at night. And I decided I need to reach out to this guy. He's 87 years old. He's not getting any younger. And I don't have the same opinion of him as I did as I did when I was growing up. And especially now in the last few years, all of these reveals had happened to me. Like, even my brother told me, it's like, dude, none of that stuff happened. He was a good guy. Your dad was actually probably the best dude your mom ever married. Wow. She ran through like 9 marriages.
Ugh.
Yeah. Very difficult woman. I just can't stress that enough.
9.
Yeah. And so I called him, and I left him a message. It was, 10:30 at night. Left him a voicemail on his cell phone. It still had the same number. Well, he called me back the next morning, but I didn't pick up the call. I didn't see that he had called, but he left me a voicemail. He left me a voicemail, and it was one of those voicemails where he thought he hung up, but he didn't. And this is when I knew that I had to go see this person. Because he said, hey, Dan, it's your dad. He's calling you back. Got your voicemail. Hit me up. Give me a call whenever. Thought he hung up, but he didn't. And he's talking to his wife now.
I pressed the bar.
I pressed the bar thing. Well, the woman that he was married to that made up all the lies about me stealing from them or whatever when I was in the 8th grade, she is deceased. Mm-hmm. And she has been gone for a good 12, 13 years. Died of Alzheimer's. So he has been remarried. And I knew this. I knew that he had a wife that they'd been together at the time about 7 or 8 years. And now about 9 years. So when 2 years ago when I was talking to him, I knew that he had remarried this woman. Remarried to this woman. So when he thought he hung up the phone, I could hear him say this to her. He goes, I don't know why the hell Danny called me on my birthday. He doesn't know it's my effing birthday. I called him on his birthday without even knowing.
Wow. Whoa.
Yeah. And I could hear in his voice, there was a tone of some kind of like, here we go again. This guy's trying to reach out to me, and then we're going to cut it off, and he's going to disappear for a couple of years. And it really hit me in the heart. It really made me feel like, dude, you can't gaslight your pop. Now, I don't know if that's the right term. I'm not gaslight, but you can't You can't just kind of
keep ghosting him.
Ghosting him. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. I can't keep teasing him with, hey, I'm trying to reach out and be cool with you, and then disappear for long periods of time and go dark. So, real quick. I decided, I called him back. I didn't let him know that I heard that voice, the extra part of that voicemail. Thankfully, he doesn't listen, so he's not finding out now, hopefully. And we talked, a lot. And I decided, you know what? Let's make a date. I'm going to drive to Norman. We're going to come up and see you, and let's do this. And he goes, well, you know, I'll kind of believe it when I see it. We're not going anywhere. We're here. You know, you're welcome to come anytime you want. Just give us a heads up. I go, I'll be there. I'll be there at 1 p.m. on Friday. And this was this past Friday, this most recent weekend. And coming up next, I will tell you what happened when I pulled into that driveway and embraced the man that I have not seen in 39 years.
This is Dan McDowell for Texans Can Academy. Texans Can brings you this Ticket Top 10 podcast. Contact Texans Can to donate your old vehicle in any condition, get it picked up for free, and you'll help kids get a second chance at a high school education. Contact them at carsforkids.org.
Danny telling us a story about going to visit his father for the first time in 39 years, and you left off at the point where you hung up the phone with him, and he said, and you told him that you would be there on Friday at 1 o'clock in Lawton, Oklahoma.
Correct. So the previous or the most recent week, my girlfriend and I were staying at her parents' house, watching their animals and her sister's animals as that faction had gone to another part of Oklahoma, to Cold Springs, for a vacation. Mm-hmm. So we're at their lake house for like 3 days and watching 8 dogs, which was, wow, that's a segment on its own at some point. But so we end up driving back to Dallas on a early Friday morning, and we hop in, take showers, and head up to Lawton, about a 3-hour drive, mm-hmm. little less. Nice drive, by the way, 287. What a great little stretch up through Wichita Falls. Yeah, and then up 44.
Mm-hmm.
So we show up. I've got the address and everything. It's 107. And we roll up into the driveway. And
you're late, Bayless.
Pretty much. I'm Bayless. Wait, hold on a second. And we roll up to the driveway and knock on the door. And out walks this. He was 5'10 when I was young. And he seemed tall to me. But he walks out, and it's this 87-year-old man. Gray hair, mustache, full head of hair, by the way. The hair fairy blessed this man, Bob. You would have thrown up at how much hair this guy has.
At 87.
At 87.
It's this whole show.
I know.
You guys are incredible.
And he's got a walking cane, and I give him a hug, and he looks up at me, and he realizes how freaking tall I am compared to him, and he goes, what the hell happened?
So he last saw you when you were like...
12, 13 years old. Yeah. I hadn't sprouted to this level yet.
Wow.
I was maybe 5, maybe his height at the time.
What year are we talking when you're 13 and you do a weekend at his house?
81.
Okay.
Yeah, 81.
So you had last seen each other in 1981.
Correct.
Amazing.
Are you weeping?
No. Didn't get to that. This was not that way. That came a little bit later. But so my girlfriend's with me. I meet his new wife. She's such a sweetheart. She looks like an old Hollywood starlet that was a star in the 50s.
Yeah.
And now she's 82 years old, very well kept, you know, plucked eyebrows, perfect amount of makeup, but very natural looking. You can tell that when this woman was 21,
she was va-va-voom.
A freaking hubba, hubba. Siren,
yeah.
And
hey,
saw
now.
Photos of her in the house of when she was a young woman. It's just stunning.
Yeah.
So Dad did really, really well in this department. And we come in. They've got a nice little 3-2 bedroom or a 3-2 house in just on the outskirts of Lawton. And my father is a career Navy man. He flew planes for the Coast Guard as a very young man, then transferred and went into the Navy and worked as an electrician on aircraft carriers. So he became... you know, kind of a career guy, and was in the Navy until he was honorably discharged, I believe, when probably in the late 70s. Well, through the years, he's had some medical problems, mainly with his eyes and with his back. But you wouldn't know it, man. The guy is as spry as you can even imagine an 87-year-old. And other than having to kind of use a little bit of cane assistance,
He's kicking ass.
He's kicking so much ass.
Yeah.
He just bought a brand new Ford F-150. He just got 100% disability status from the Navy, which means his salary tripled.
And he's fully taken care of
fully
medically.
Fully taken care of medically. He doesn't pay any sales tax on his home, on
boots.
On anything, on boots in New Jersey, on groceries that go to the commissary. Then he's fully embraced the veteran lifestyle and moved to Norman, Oklahoma because I'm sorry, Lawton, because exit Fort Sill. There's a naval base there, so they got the commissary, and it's just a military town, and Oklahoma really treats their veterans incredibly well as opposed to Texas. So it's a great place for him to live. And we hung out for 24 hours. I was there at 1 and had to leave on Saturday to go back to Waukene to pick up our dogs and then go back to Dallas, and then I had to work on Sunday afternoon in the studio, blah blah blah. But
did he dispel a lot of the same things that you had questions about?
Yeah, he did. He's like, you know, he told me the story about when he ended up divorcing my mom and got an attorney in Nevada to get this marriage over with. And the guy was like, yeah, you know, this is what you're obligated to pay in child support. He's like, those kids can't live off that. So he ended up paying like three times the amount. They were trying to do, I think it was $50 a month per kid in 1978, 79. And he's like, I can't do that. So he ended up giving more. And he goes, yeah, I never missed a payment. It's like, that's not what Evelyn said. He's like, well, it's the truth. She kept that from me. She said that he never paid child support and he never missed a payment.
And you know, for years, you had made it sound like that it was the running gag on this show that he went out for cigarettes and never came back.
And it kind of
I had that perception for 20 years,
and it did feel that way because I think once you knew that woman long enough, the jig was up, the facade was exposed, and he knew that he was in a really, really difficult situation, and even his dad warned him about it when it was nearing that time. He's like, that woman is poisonous, and she is going to try to poison your relationship with your kids, and she did. But it's all in the past, and we had a great time, man. We hung out. We went to dinner that night. He's driving and going, yeah, I had to get this thing up to 120 to break it in, breaking the motor. When I'm like, what the hell are you doing driving 120?
You still sit in the back cab, Bayless?
So you guys just grabbed like a guest bedroom or something? I guess if I had... I'd be like, do we stay there or do we not?
It felt great.
Awesome.
There was a lot of stuff. There wasn't a whole lot of stuff that I needed to be aware of as far as new truths and new reveals and secrets, and lies dispelled and all of that stuff.
Did he look like the same guy?
Man, he did. He really did. Like he just looked like face? An older version of what I remember, and just a little more hunched over, a little bit shorter, but still the same guy. Phil was a career like cigarette smoker from the age of 12.
Yeah.
11, 12. It's just what you did back in the 40s. Sure. You know, you in the Navy. I mean, I barely recall the man without a cigarette. And when he would try to quit, he would try to quit by smoking a pipe or, you know, nicotine gum. But he was always a nicotine addict. And it was really funny that I didn't see him. There were no cigarettes in the house. But we go out after dinner and sit outside one night because they got a brand new little puppy dog, and we're playing with the dog and just having a great time. And he pulls out this freaking hipster vape pen, like the Saroy vape, and there he is sitting out on his back porch having him a puff of his vape.
Wow!
Like how long ago did he quit smoking? I wonder.
He said he'd been off cigarettes when he met his current wife.
So like a decade.
Yeah, about a decade.
So probably smoked three packs a day
until he was 77,
and
still,
now he's
yeah.
That's just weird genetics.
It is really weird genetics. And but real quick, I want to tell you a little bit about this woman that he married. They met on this website called Plenty of Fish, which is, I guess it's a dating website for people that don't want to be on Tinder or whatever the other ones are,
good.
For like the younger kids.
I don't want to see your dad on Tinder.
No. So he met this woman. They went on a date, and I believe they were married about a month afterwards. Because that's just what you do when you're 80.
Absolutely.
Cut through the BS.
We don't have time for any of this.
You want to marry?
Are we getting married or not?
And I cannot tell you what a great experience it was. He was just he's just a sweet, sweet guy. And he told me, he's like, yeah, one of the main problems I had when I was raising you kids is I had such a hard time with corporal punishment. I hated giving you kids spankings, and I just wouldn't do it. But I would come home, and you guys would have misbehaved, and your mother would be like, wait till your father gets home because he's going to wear your ass out. And so that was set up, and he couldn't win. He had to follow through with what she put on him. And then told me later that he used to beat the crap out of us when we were young. I was never beaten, but I had that fabricated memory in my brain.
Right.
He was just
you can be told something long enough, especially as a kid, to where you believe it's true.
Absolutely.
And that's like, very common.
Yeah, why would she not tell you the truth?
And and spending time with this man as an adult and as a, you know, an octogenarian, he never came off that way. I there's not a mean bone in that guy's body.
Yeah.
He's just a sweetheart, and his wife is a badass. His wife used to date Elvis.
What? Shut up.
No. Absolutely telling the truth.
All these weird Elvis connections
My dad knew Elvis in Memphis and introduced me to Elvis in 1973 when I was a little kid at a karate studio where they worked out. My dad gave up karate, I believe, when he turned 60. And he said he attributes his long life and health to karate, the studying martial arts and living that lifestyle. And lots of cigarettes, clearly. But yeah, his wife, she moved to Memphis to go to college and went to, I guess it was called Memphis State at the time.
Yeah,
still is.
Now it's
Memphis?
No, it's been shortened to Memphis.
It's Memphis.
Yeah.
Does Keith Lee know this?
Probably. Yeah.
And she dated Elvis, went on several dates with Elvis. So we all three have an Elvis connection.
God.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah, so we played dominoes until midnight on Friday and then got up the next morning and finished the game and went out for breakfast, and it was time for us to go, and I wish that I could have stayed two or three more days. It would have been fantastic.
Well, now you can.
Yeah, now I can.
I mean, now
it's open. I called him, you know, when we got home, and he was like, "Thanks so much for calling me." And I could tell that he trusts that I'm not going to just ghost.
Yeah.
And we have that trust in each other. We're going to stay connected.
What a happy story.
Yeah, man, it worked out so great, and I could not be more full, you know,
with
this man.
As full as you are, imagine what that means, because, you know, the dad part of it, it means more.
It just does.
It just means more.
And that's what Audrey kept telling me, my girlfriend. That's what she kept telling me. It's like, as much, as difficult as this is for you, he is freaking out right now.
Yes.
He is pacing the house waiting for you to arrive. And he handled it like a champ. And we did have a moment when the girls went out. Girls, his wife is 82.
Yeah.
That we stopped. We were driving down a neighborhood, and there was a garage sale. And Iris wanted to go to the garage sale. So her and Audrey went out, and they rummaged through the garage sale. And we were like, we're going to stay back. He goes, I'm going to stay back here and have a smoke. And he gets out his puff pen. And we sat there, and we talked, and we kind of had a pretty cool emotional moment. And we knew that this is going to be this way. We're going to stay connected until he, you know, moves on to the next plane or wherever you go when you die, Bob.
Man,
good on you.
Good for
you.
Yeah,
it was. I could not believe how great it went. And I'm not gonna regret the 39 years that we didn't have. I'm not going to have resentment that we didn't, or I'm not going to judge myself or beat myself up or judge him for him not reaching out enough, because at this point in life, it doesn't matter.
Nope.
What matters is right now,
right,
and what we can do in the future as far as staying connected.
And on July 9th, you made the call. You
on
made
his
the
birthday,
move.
I didn't even know.
That's perfect, man. That
he needs
perfect.
To come to Dallas. You need to take him to Zippers.
Or Ticket Stock.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Ticket Stock.
Look, and
Chappie.
And I'll tell you what.
With Jeffy, yeah.
He's a pretty pretty woke dude, but I don't think he wants to go to Zippers.
Maybe he can.
He's a career Navy man, and I don't think he'd be able to get his head around what goings on might be happening inside of Zippers.
Maybe he can beat up Chappie with karate.
Well,
with karate.
There's only one way to find out.
Right. That's awesome, dude.
All right, dude. Thanks for giving me the form.